Thanks for that. Louise, I think we've got plenty of food for thought and material for conversation. Usually my experience in Western Australia is that people have lots of questions in the audience and very engaged, so I'm going to try and keep my questions to the panel pretty brief and give you plenty of time to ask questions. I want to start with you, Mark. I mean, Louise has presented some compelling evidence, I think, around the fact that there has been a lot of work done, a lot of reports, a lot of evidence that we're seeing every day at the moment around the issues with the safety net. Yet it doesn't feel like there's the political will to tackle some of these issues. Do you think that politicians are engaged on these issues, and do you think there's a way to get them more engaged to see movement on some of these issues?
That's a really difficult question. In my role, I meet with lots of politicians, and generally they're all very decent people, and they have a strong commitment to do the right thing. So I'll start with that. But I think that the issue that we're confronting is a much bigger one, and that is the systems that we're relying on to address issues of disadvantage are no longer fit for purpose. And so what we have is we have systems that are functioning on a rationing of services. So because of our resource limitations, we ration our services. The services themselves spend inordinate amounts of money on gatekeeping. So we spend more time keeping people out of the service system than we do in inviting them in. And I don't think that's an issue that we can easily solve by talking to a politician. What we need to do, I believe, is recognise that we need to open up the service system to more people. I think that if you think about Newstart as an example, or if we think about the job employment network and how that works, we actually punish people for keeping people out of the system. So we reward the providers by taking people out of the system. We reward them for giving them training that has actually not been proven to lead to jobs. So what we're doing is we're building a system that's based around a series of metrics which will never actually achieve the outcome that we want to achieve. The solution most people know is that to get a job you need to know someone. But we don't invest money in building networks and improving people to improve their interpersonal skills. What we do is we make them do courses that don't mean anything. So I think the issue that we really need to deal with here is one about returning dignity to the equation and saying to people that everyone deserves a service. By using this rationing approach where we set benchmarks and thresholds before you're able to access a service. Now, this is services around mental health. These are services around poverty. These are services around violence. There are thresholds that if you don't meet them, you don't get the service. And what that does is that it means that by the time someone reaches the threshold, any number of opportunities to address their difficulties have gone, and the problem we're dealing with is multiplied by factors of 3, 4, 5, and 6. So I think that the issue isn't one of convincing politicians we need to do the work. I think it's one as a community. I don't think we can leave it to the politicians. I think your figure up there about 80% of people are worried about the income gap between rich and poor. I think there's equivalent evidence that people are worried about early childhood hunger. There's equivalent evidence about treating Newstart recipients better. The community wants us to do this better, but they don't know how. And to finish up, we're relying on a political system that's no longer fit for purpose to do that. It's for the community. It's for us to do that.
Thanks, Mark. And I think one of the things you mentioned there was around, you know, the human and empathy. And Nilesh, it was interesting just talking to you before the event started. I went straight to the issues of technology and data with you, given some of the work that you do at Illuminant Solutions with clients who are helping vulnerable people. And your response straight back to me was, well, I don't start at that point. I start at the issue of empathy and the human. So how do you approach some of these issues in the work that you do?
Yeah. Can I start saying thank you to CEDA for inviting me and giving me opportunity to wear my CEDA socks? Yeah. Tick box, done. Okay. So I'm very excited wearing CEDA socks. Thank you. If you didn't notice. Yeah. So thank you. I think I like 2 points which we started off about data, and Louisa mentioned that data is not the solution. It creates the awareness. It gives you the insight, but it's not the start of that. And Mark also mentioned about the empathy and human approach. So in Illuminance, what we do is lead the conversation with what's the real challenge where people are facing, and what is the people focus on that? Where there is a missing of qualitative data, there is more quantitative data. If we look at the 20 years ago or 21 years ago, when this report started, there were 600,000 people still under the poverty line, and still we have the around million in there. So data has always been there. When I was learning computers in 95, 96, and became a web developer in 99, we were all like, dot-com boom and data information will be available and we'll be able to do more and use this data correctly and try and solve some of the largest problem in the world with internet and others. But 20 years now, I'm sitting here and I'm still looking at the same problem. So data hasn't played its a role which is supposed to play, right? And when we look at the challenge in the country here in Australia, some services are offered by state, human welfare health services, some services are offered by federally, and they collect different data, and there is no match of that, and these are silos of data. Whereas New Zealand, it's a two-layer of government. One is the central, and one which is local. And at the central level, they manage the welfare, health services, human services, and they have the bird view of what's going on in the country, but not us. We have a lot of silos going on here. And 50% of our indigenous disadvantaged community doesn't have access to the infrastructure to access internet. Even if they had internet access, and actually they don't have the digital literacy to be part of that. So we are actually in a digital 4.0 and industry 4.0, Australia being ahead, we are leaving behind the most vulnerable out there, which we're not collecting the data enough, or we don't have the understanding of the challenges. And in your speech, you mentioned a lot of things about the New South Wales, a lot of example. But if you look at the recent one, bushfire, New South Wales government and Data 61, has been running a project called Spark, where you can predict the bushfires and everything, but it didn't really work, did it? Right? And that was all around data and prediction and predictive analytics. But one indigenous man, his name is possibly Stephen S. something, he predicted that you are sitting on a time bomb a year ago. There is an article on him that he said that what's happening here on the ground, the way you're doing land management, is not really working. It's creating more situation like this fire, so we didn't listen to the human side of it, right? So I think relying too much on data is not the way forward, but relying on the human side of the empathetic approach and human elements of the decision-making we make is more important. So at Illuminance, we lead everything keeping the human or person-centered approach. Another example of AI failing is if you give them a photo of black person on image recognition, they identify that as a gorilla. You might have heard of that, right? Not as a black person from Africa or whatever. Another AI is that car is likely to hit a dark black person and then make a decision to have a crash than the white one. In HR, we know that if you do the HR AI analytics to screen the CVs, women are kept not into the pile of the job application at the top level because all the prediction which is done or AI teaching is being done is by men. So men are always coming up in the pile in the top with the CVs and everything, right? So we haven't taught enough human behavior yet. And there is not enough focus on the people side of the technology yet. And the data is still there to give us the little insight, but not a solution in itself. And when it comes to Illuminance solution, the Aboriginal Trust Management System, which we have designed for Native Title Trust and Prescribed Body Corporation, was to allow those community, indigenous community, to manage their own fund and self-fund so that they can use the money which was supposed to be for the welfare of the community, not to administration for the fund by the third party. So as we're starting to see in a couple of examples I gave, that is all around people rather than the data and the technology. And that's what Illuminance always focuses on.
I'm going to ask one question to Louise, and then we're going to come to the floor, so have your questions ready. Louise, you mentioned the experience in New Zealand, and interesting to see with the new PM in the last budget, they've embarked on a wellbeing budget, and we are here in Australia coming into our mid-year budget updates and budget season early next year. This idea of focusing budgets very much around investments in wellbeing as a concept, do you think that's a helpful lever that we could think about here in Australia with our budgets?
Extremely helpful. WACOS every year does a state budget submission, and we've presented it, we released it about a month or so ago, and we've presented it to the state government, and producing a wellbeing budget is really, really important. So I think for many people, Jacinta is really quite... In the international politics of today, she's quite she stands out from the crowd, from the direction many others sort of governments are actually taking. And it's really interesting when you actually go over to New Zealand, because they're not overly... The Kiwis aren't overly surprised by what she's actually doing, because that's the expectations they have. And there's significance, but it's not just about doing a well-being budget. There's significant things that she's actually implemented, like increasing the minimum wage, increasing social housing stock, changing their juvenile justice system, tackling gender equity. So it's not just about strategies. She's also doing the implementation, and I think that's the point of frustration of the community service sector at the moment, especially here in WA. There's a talk of an awful lot of strategies, but there's not a lot of implementation that's actually going on, and that's because there's a lack of investment. Because you can do a strategy, you can bring in consultants, you can have us all talk to the end of the days. That doesn't cost a lot. The implementation is where the money's needed. And what we're actually hoping to do is actually shift the expenditure from the crisis end. You know, there's somebody kept saying, you know, from the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, I know you've heard that a few times, Mark, to actually bringing it back to the top of the cliff. But in the short term, when I talk short term, it could be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. So it won't be 1 year, it's more than likely to be 3 to 5 years. You actually need the investment in the critical end and the early intervention end, because you can't just all of a sudden take away those vital crisis services, but we do need much greater investment in the early intervention and prevention.
Mark? I've been to New Zealand recently and I agree with everything Louise has said, but I think there's another angle which the Scottish are currently exploring, and in their national performance framework they've got metrics around being a kinder country. And I think that's a real challenge for us, because, you know, it could just be government spin, you know, but we'll all be nice and kind. But if you think about it, what it actually does, what it's really calling for, is an engagement of the citizenry itself in doing, going the extra mile and doing something to help someone out. And I think that we're there's a real risk for us here that we continue to look to someone else to solve our problems. And I think that by putting something like kindness on the agenda, they've sort of put up a notice saying that it's actually we're all collectively responsible here and we can all do something about it. Now, if you might be a beneficiary of the kindness, which means that your loneliness, social isolation could be resolved, but if you're actually contributing with kindness, your own sense of well-being, your self-esteem, that will improve as well. So I think I absolutely agree that the wellbeing stuff in New Zealand is really, really important, but I think we need to go deeper than that.
All right. So do we have any questions in the audience? I've got one over here.
Virginia Christie, CEDA State Advisory Council member. That was a very interesting discussion for me, because this isn't my space usually. And I hear that there are some problems that potentially can be addressed as almost quick fixes, like matching of training with jobs and the like. So there appear to be some things that we might be able to do. I'm really interested in a community approach to this, though, and that's coming out quite clearly. And so everyone here, I'm sure, is here because they genuinely want to help in some way. So what would be your first and second best options or solutions that you think we might be able to engage in and be part of?
Can I give an example of what we're doing around NDIS is doing a eHarmony.com type matchmaking of the carer and the participant or client, they call it, where we have seen that, you know, marriages are more successful now with the data and perfect matchmaking on dating sites. It has proven the success rates is higher. The same goes around two areas where we can use perfect matchmaking using data is with the right preferences of the participant and client with the carers and matchmaking them not just on the compliance side or proximity side or the most efficient route for them to care for them, but more around the personal attributes which they are inspired by and how they can connect with each other at the human level, where they come from, whether they're from ethnic background or food preferences or language preferences and age preferences and gender preferences and others. So when you do that, start to do matchmaking, it plays a huge role. On the other side is the refugee or the first-time migrant when they're coming to this country to settle down, the mentoring side, again, matching the right mentor who might have possibly gone through this similar experience when they arrived in Australia, then they would be able to empathize with the journey of this person might go through what you have already gone through. So doing the right matchmaking at that qualitative level, not at a quantitative level, could help quite a lot. And then that's one of two areas which I have seen success happening of data used in a right way.
Well, two things very quickly. I think one is we need to be honest with ourselves in our discussions and our peers about the state of the nation or the state of the state, in that we do have increasing disadvantage. It's out of control. We have less secure employment. Mental health is, people experiencing negative mental health is spiralling. Suicide is increasing. Those two deeply into younger and younger age groups. So I think the need for us to take some action as a community and to have the discussion around is this the Western Australia that we want is really important. So I think we need to speak. We need to make it part of the narrative. It's hard to get discussion and forums like this together, and thank you, Sita, for doing it. But generally, people aren't interested in this sort of discussion, but I think it's a question that, as a community, we have to ask. And the second thing is a more local action. If you are employing or if you are looking to do something meaningful, mentor a young person. Youth unemployment in this state hasn't budged for 20 years, you know. If you're a young person that's unskilled looking for a job in Western Australia, you've got 5 years of hard toil ahead of you where you're getting beaten around by the job search networks, you know. If you know people, do something a bit different. Engage the community that you normally wouldn't engage. Employ someone that doesn't look like you. Employ someone that didn't go to the same sort of school as you. You know, go step outside the box. Ultimately, it's up to us to break the algorithms, you know. They will determine everything for us. But if we step outside that space and introduce something different, they don't handle it so well.
I'll just... The space in which WACOS works, it's our policy and social policy work and our advocacy work that we actually do with government, state and federally. So we live in a democracy, so the way you vote is really important and the messages we actually give government about what's actually important. There is growing disadvantage, even though it's denied on many, many, many fronts. So, and actually having the conversations with your friends, your families, start following, you know, pages like WACOS to actually see, and our Twitter feed, get our newsletter, start seeing actually what's actually occurring, because the more you're informed and the networks that you had and actually growing the message, because I 100% agree with Mark, the solutions will actually come from the community, but we also need leadership in our governments about the way, you know, how we'll actually turn this ship around, because they've got their hands on on many of the levers. The system is truly broken.
Thank you all. My name's Luke Bailey. I work for Bush Heritage Australia, which is a conservation organisation, and I'm from regional WA, so it's great to be in this forum hearing about these important topics. I think it's really important we should collaborate more between the environmental sector and the social services sector. I think there's a lot of wins that we could make. But I guess the question is to the panel, in terms of implementation and accessing more money, are you finding there's more private capital coming into the to your work? Because in the environmental sector, we're hearing about impact investors and private money outside of the government that are trying to leverage positive impacts. And I'm wondering if you're seeing that in the social services side of things, because in the environmental sector, it's quite difficult to enter that market, but they talk about social impact bonds and other, you know, new innovative tools like that. I was just wondering if they're hitting the rubber's hitting the road.
It's not big here in WA. There is some groups starting. There's the Social Impact Collective. I actually went to an inaugural meeting last week on it. You've got one particular super fund that's actually looking at investing, but it may not be social impact bonds. So it is very new here in WA. There's over in the eastern states, it's had some success. And I 100% agree with you about the community sector and the environmental sector actually working together, and the recent COAG meeting here about supporting low and disadvantaged people in social housing. And the opportunities, of course, it's an environmental issue, but also a social issue. People living in poverty are the most disadvantaged and the most affected by climate change because they can't afford the heating, the cooling, the electricity bills, so we need to be working together.
And we've got our last question here. I think it's Paul.
Sorry?
You take this one.
No, it's to a number of you, but not individually set. It was interesting, Mark, you were saying mentor young unemployed people, because we do have an incredible problem here in Western Australia with an increasing trend over a 10-year period in terms of high youth unemployment. So it's an incredibly serious problem. Just so happens that Mentoring to Work is a particular program that is being trialled at present. Now, I just want to take the discussion, so that is an actual response, policy response, which is being run by COTA. And I want to take the discussion into the role of data evaluation and whether we do need more research or whether research is sufficient and we've done enough. So on the Mentoring to Work program, the question would be, what impact does mentoring have? But who gets the benefit from mentoring under what circumstances? So we might say mentoring has a positive impact on unemployment, but are we sure that it does in all circumstances for all people? Now, if we go into the 100 Families WA study, that has illuminated a whole range of evidence that we don't see in the big data sets that are going to be linked up, or we don't see in HILDA. And the real issue is not to say, right, we have enough data or we need more data, but to use that data effectively and understand what that evidence is telling us about disadvantage and the service response. So some of the stats that were put up, for example, if we're looking at debt and the impact of debt, what is it that resulted in a quarter of the families in the study taking out payday loans? We know absolutely that payday loans shouldn't have occurred.
Notice how we flinched when you said that.
So what does that tell us about the service response? And then to continue this discussion a little further, when we look at the budgets of people and we say, OK, someone has had a shock to their system in terms of a shock cost, how does the service response deal with that person as they move from day to day to day in terms of that response and how we would work through that journey with them? Now, I think that the real data that is being collected in something like 100 Families can illuminate potential service responses. So it's really important that we collect evidence of that kind, because it does matter, and it's not being collected elsewhere, and isn't the kind of data that is linked up.
Okay, Paul. Yeah, Paul, we should have had you actually up here. I think this is, and I'll give 100 families the a key pitch here. What's fundamentally different with 100 families that's different to other research, which you've just said, what was groundbreaking in interviewing the 400 people, people who were part of the survey were part of the design of the survey. People of the 100 families have been integral in this all the way along. So, you know, I'm telling Paul that as a researcher at a university, we don't need any more research, so he might shoot me. But I didn't mean it fully. But what's also different is that groundbreaking data of 400 is now being translated, and the solutions is interviewing families for over a year every fortnight to actually the solutions from the families about how the service system actually needs to change. It's always experts coming in and telling people how the system and how the world has to actually to change. Experts like WACOS, experts like UWA, experts like TKI, we're all trying to do it differently, and that's what's groundbreaking about 100 families.
Paul, I'm going to have a crack at all of those things.
And Mark, this... You get the last word.
Oh, beauty. thank you. Briefly, when I was talking about mentoring, what I'm talking about is introducing a relationship base to the response to the young person. Okay, so much of what we do now is transactional. And we know that if you don't have a meaningful relationship, your results are going to be down the tube anyway. So whether mentoring, or we call it youth work, or we call it trusted other, whatever it is, we need to introduce something to people's lives that actually brings relationship. And once you have the relationship, then you can move on. In terms of data, we absolutely need to collect data. And we collect at Anglican KWA, we collect lots and lots of data. But we don't collect it to satisfy some government policy, because there's not a lot of evidence that data influences government policy. We've talked about that already. What we collected for is service improvement. So with 100 families, when we found that so many people were suffering from food insecurity, the question immediately to us was, that means that people who are walking in the door to get our service, whether it be financial counselling or whether it be family counselling, most of them are going to be hungry. So how are you going to get people to concentrate on their life situation and how they're going to improve things if they're hungry? So we're now talking to Food Bank about whether they can make food available to us so that people won't be hungry when we're trying to work with them. And the final thing about payday lenders, and those figures in 100 families are astonishing. An unsolicited comment, payday lenders are a scourge. We have to get rid of them really, really quickly. But what they do is they make money available to people who are really desperate really quickly and really easily. And if you go to a financial counsellor, you won't get it. You won't get relief easily. There will be hard work that has to be done. So payday lenders are convenient and they are continuous and they trap people and then you never get out.
And
so
often the only option.
And often the only
Not
option.
Only the option. Can't leave that one out.
No. So, but where does to tie that all back together to data, I think there's a great opportunity that's looking us right in the face as a community with the introduction of open banking and open banking data. Okay, and that's when, for people who aren't aware, simply it's putting a person's financial data in their own hands rather than the bank's hands. In terms of dealing with financial exclusion and the access to proper loans and stuff like that, banking open data creates a wonderful opportunity for us. It's got high risk, but if we can get open data into our financial counselling services, into our no-interest loan providers, we could wipe out a fair part of the payday loan stuff straight away. But we have to take that opportunity, and that's a risk.
We're out of time, but please join with me in thanking our panel for their comments.